Welcome to the Car Psychic Show. Today we're going to be celebrating all things Malaise era. That's 1973 to about 1983. That was the era of automobiles that were not so great. And also right in the middle of that era, we had the launch of MTV, August 1981. All right, so I'm going to play for you the first song from MTV. Everybody knows what it is. We'll have the lead up to it, and we'll see how it sounds here.
Rock and roll.
Video killed the radio star, as we all know. All right, you're listening to the Car Psychic Show. We are just getting going here. We want to welcome our guest, Avery Horton, who's here with me today. And I just was goofing around on the internet and saw that it was August 1981 that MTV launched. And I remember it was a big deal back in the day. Just out of high school at that point myself. And we sat around and watched MTV because it was the new cool thing to do. So we played the first song there from MTV by the Buggles. Video killed the radio star. And not really, but they thought it was going to do it. And from that era, we go back all the way to 1973 to 1983, and a term in the automotive world called the malaise era. And it's a term describing American cars from roughly 1973 to 1983. During that time, American cars pretty much suffered very poor performance and construction. Until this time, the automotive industry in the United States had relied on powerful but inefficient engines to drive typically large and heavy vehicles. So, you know, the fuel mileage on average was somewhere around 15 miles per gallon for your average car back then. And then the 73, the oil crisis came upon us, and they're showing the prices. Oil went from $3 per barrel to nearly $12. My goodness. But adjusted for inflation, that was a huge jump. You know, it's that four times jump in price. And I remember the gas lines. I wasn't driving yet in 73, but I recall the neighbors switching license plates so that they could go get fuel on odd and even days. It was how your license plate ended, as I recall. Yeah, odd or even number would be odd or even days. Yeah. And the cars were such horrible gas hogs back then, you needed gas every day. Pretty much if you drove like a normal person. What a foreign concept today, really, huh? When you think about it today, you know, we have great range and great mileage in most cars. Or, you know, at least double what they were then, if not quadruple, for fuel mileage for many cars. Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about cars on the show, and Avery's here. We actually worked on one of his cars today and did a jerry rig kind of fix, but we did it, and we figured it out. And we're going to be playing more songs from 1981, basically, and the first 24 hours of MTV, I found a set list. So I went back and I found the original recordings of said songs, and we'll throw a few in along the way. So what's up, Avery?
Oh, I was thinking we should probably tell the listeners about what's okay to do on your own car. Because there's some, I think okay. Some people are scared about what to do.
Right.
They're afraid they can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be intimidating. That's a good topic.
Start with the simplest things like checking your air pressure on your tires.
Right, of course. And but now all these new cars have tire pressure monitoring systems, and it tells you what the pressure is. It's sometimes in each individual tire, depending upon the year of the car. And sometimes it'll just say you have a low tire. It doesn't tell you which one. So that's good. But checking your tire pressures on cars is important. You know, at least I say at least once a month, ideally, you should be checking your tire pressure. And when in doubt, go on the high side of what's recommended, usually somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 PSI on your average car. And when in doubt, consult your owner's manual and or the side of the tire. The side of the tire always shows the recommended maximum pressure that you would put in that tire. Now, that does not necessarily mean that's how much air you should put in it on your car. For each car, it's different. And if you were to put 45 pounds of air in their tire on a, you know, 1999 Honda, you would notice a very harsh ride with 45 pounds of air in the tire. And in fact, with too much air in the tire, it could become unsafe and be a bit skittish on the road, so to speak. So that's why it's important to know what the tire pressure should be. But talking about doing things on your car, so to speak, what can you accomplish? I think cleaning is a really good thing. Don't be a pig. clean up that inside of your car. Boy, I should talk. If you went out and looked at my car, you go, dude, don't talk.
Well, I think on the cleaning, it's more like, you know, on the edge of the doors where you have the gaskets and the windows.
Right. You get all the muck in between there and, you know, the rocker panels, the lower portions of your car seem to get a lot of neglect because you can't bend down there so easy.
Yeah, or under the hood, you know, catches leaves by the windshield wipers.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. A lot of people park in these tree-lined neighborhoods and their yards and such, and you get a ton of leaves or pine needles just packing the intake. And right there below the windshield typically is where the air conditioning and heating system sucks in air, and a lot of times it wants to suck in those decomposing leaves and such, and you can really build up a lot of nastiness right there, and it will work its way all the way into the air box. And some cars have air filters inside the cabin that you can change. That's called a cabin filter, not to be confused with the cabin at the lake. That's the cabin filter, and those can get disgustingly clogged with just all kinds of yuckies. So always be aware of your cabin filter.
Also the gasket on the trunk, too.
Right, right. We want to inspect it for damage. A lot of times putting stuff in and out of the trunk will cut the gasket. And but due to, contrary to popular belief, most trunk leaks are not the trunk gasket. They are, in fact, usually the taillight gaskets. So as the water cascades down over the trunk, it goes between the taillights and the body of the car and on way back down under towards the bumper. But what happens is these gaskets that they use to install the taillights sometimes don't seal quite right. And that's usually your number one culprit. If you have water in your trunk, one of the first places you want to look is pretend like you're going to change a taillight bulb and pull off the cover or whatever you need to do to see around the taillight and how it bolts to the inside of the trunk. In that area, if you wipe your finger in there and you get water on your finger or you can see a trail of water there's no doubt water is getting past the taillight and into the trunk. And sometimes it'll actually fill up the taillight with water. And we've seen those fish tank taillights. And that as that taillight fills up with water, it spills over where the light bulb goes in and back into your trunk. So that's one popular thing.
Yeah, that's one thing I think people could possibly do for themselves, the average person, is change a taillight or headlight. What do you think?
Yeah, on most cars. But again, they did... The manufacturers keep doing this to us with these crazy xenon headlight bulbs or HID headlight bulbs. And some cars, you literally have to reprogram the computer when you change a light bulb. You have to tell the computer that, yes, I just changed the light bulb. Don't worry about it. Move on. So they get super complicated. But on your average car, yes, changing a light bulb should be a do-it-yourselfer kind of thing, for sure.
But the only problem is sometimes they have, it's not that it's hard to do, but you might have to get a six-point head, star head.
Right, a Torx driver.
Yeah, you have to get some special tool, basically.
Right.
Or specialty tool to just do the simplest thing.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. There are special tools required sometimes to change the simplest things. Other things you can do yourself. Well, I think what's important is to learn about your car. Take a tour under the hood. Open the hood of that car that you have and understand how to check the oil, how to check the radiator overflow tank, how to look for a cracked belt or hose, how to maybe spot a coolant leak or a cracked hose or something. I think those are important things, but ideally, learning how to check your oil is important. How do I check the oil? These are very basic things, and some people, you know, they just don't want to be bothered with it, and rightfully so. With most cars today, if you service it properly and change the oil when you're supposed to change it, you shouldn't have to worry about it. You shouldn't have to check the oil in between. if everything is operating properly. But if you're on a shoestring and you're driving an older vehicle, no, I caution you, please take a minute and check under the hood, because by not doing it, you could cost yourself thousands of dollars, which could have been prevented had you only looked for the obvious.
Yeah, that's true. Or things like changing out your windshield wipers.
Right, yeah, changing wipers. Again, they've made it more complicated and sometimes more simple. Some wiper blades are very specific. Some are just generic and interchangeable. But depending upon the car, it could be a fiasco. So your
it's
research.
It's a safety thing, too.
Yeah.
Especially in this, yeah, coming up to the rainy season.
Right.
You know, your wipers might get hard over the summer.
Yeah.
And you should have good windshield wipers.
Yeah, ineffective wiper blades are a bad thing. And usually, it's a $10, $20 solution, and you're seeing your way clear on a rainy day. Yeah. All right, so we are going to take a break here and play a song. All right, so here is a little Pat Benatar.
Hit me with your best shot.
You better run. Welcome back. That was Pat Benatar. You Better Run, You Better Hide from 1981. All right, I'm here with Avery. It's a car psychic. You're listening to KBOG, Bandon, Oregon, 97.9. We're talking about what tools. What tools should you carry in your car?
Yeah, besides the jack and the lug wrench.
Right, yeah. Do you even have a jack and a lug nut wrench and a spare tire, do you know where they are? What if you got a flat tire? Are you just going to call your daddy? Yeah. That's fine. If you can do that, that's great. But most of us might have a AAA card. You can let the AAA guy figure it out if you want to wait around for an hour or two or longer in some places. So it's important that you learn, where's my jack? Where's my spare tire? Oh, I can bet you right now, if half of you went out there to check your spare tire would be flat.
Or non-existent.
Or non-existent, or your jack would be non-existent.
Or missing a piece.
Right, missing some key component to get the wheel off of your car, which is tragic, really, in many situations. You will be literally stranded. So beyond that, other basic tools, what do you think, Avery? I mean, what should one have in their car?
I guess if you think in terms of if something goes wrong, can I fix it? Or if somebody stopped to help, do I have what they need to fix it? So, for example, a pair of jumper cables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, jumper cables are important. I agree.
So that would be one instance. Mm-hmm. Here on the coast, like in my pickup trucks, I usually have a tow rope because I've seen many a tourist pull off on the sand and be stuck. So I just go over and
strap,
drag them out, and they usually try to pay me. Go, no, just help the next person you see that you can help. So.
Right. Yeah, I think jumper cables, that's a number one. Even a crummy set, cheap $10, $15 set of jumper cables is good to have. Excuse me. A tow strap, that's great. Basic
screwdriver.
Yeah, basic hand tools.
Socket set.
Yeah, ideally, yeah. You know, but a lot of people would say, you know, I don't know how to use those things. I would know the first thing about, you know, putting a socket in a wrench on my engine.
It's maybe you don't know how to do it, but somebody stops. If they know how to do it, they know how to use the tool. You have the tool with you.
Yeah, you can't assume that person that stops is going to have the tools. So a basic complement, a little satchel, if you will, of a screwdriver, a pair of pliers, maybe some duct tape.
Like carrying, you know, we talk about tools, but like things like oil, antifreeze, water.
Ideally, maybe a spare quart of oil.
Power steering fluid, brake fluid.
Maybe. At least a bottle of water that you could use for either drinking and or for the engine. A lot of people just have a specific old coolant bottle they might throw in the trunk and maybe have a diluted mixture of coolant in the car.
And make sure you use distilled water in your radiator as opposed to tap water.
Well, one might argue that is good to do, but
yes.
Believe me, wet water is better than no water.
True. So. Yeah, and also distilled water for your battery if you have a battery
that's
you have
serviceable,
to pop the
top
off and top it off.
Right. That's the ideal situation, but again, water is better than no water. Whatever you can get your hands on. I've heard of urine in extreme cases in radiators. But we won't go there. This is a family show.
Back to the sewer again. That was last week.
Right. That's been very true, though. I have heard such. Back to basics.
A spare set of fuses.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and many times in your car today, you'll have a fuse box, and many manufacturers provide you with three or four spare fuses in the cover of the fuse box or in a slot in there. There'll be spare fuses, which can come in handy. You might blow a cigarette lighter fuse for your accessories, for instance, your cell phone thing. If that fuse pops for whatever reason, it'll be handy on a road trip to have another fuse so you can charge your phone.
Or a spare headlight or taillight bulbs?
Yeah, maybe a spare bulb. That those are good for sure.
Turn signal bulbs.
Yeah.
License plate light bulb.
Sorry, keep bumping something here. yeah, those are good things to have. And you know, this all again goes back to the year, make, and model of the car. You know, some are just so odd. And one thing I found with more and more with modern cars, the light bulb seems to last longer. Things like that. They're very long life as compared to yesteryear, as compared to the malaise era, for instance. Yeah. That's for sure. The reliability factor definitely has gone up over the decades, I would say, without a doubt. Boy, it was unheard of back in the malaise era to... You drove your car for 100,000 miles? It was like a major accomplishment back
then. Oh, yeah. And the other thing... back in those days, we didn't have YouTube. I mean, looking up stuff on the internet is just, it's just unbelievable how many videos there are that have your year, make, model of car.
An exact problem.
Yeah, and your same problem. Uh-huh. And there's forums out there. So I've come to rely on it. And it gives at least it gives me, it's like the confidence. If they can do it, I can do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and a lot of guys are pretty informative in their videos on the steps they take, and you'll usually be able to find a problem with your car on the internet where someone else talks about the same problem. And the fun part about the internet is trying to weed through the chaff, so to speak, and find my exact situation, so to speak.
Yeah, and some videos are better than others. I hate the guy say, "Oh, yeah, we'll just take that off," but instead of showing you exactly what they went through to take it off,
right.
they just like, "We'll just take that off." You know, like some of those couplers, the electric couplers.
Uh-huh.
It's like
the connectors.
Those connectors,
right.
They are a pain.
It's a magic trick to get them disconnected.
Yeah, or you know, some people with the high pressure lines, like on power steering, and
right,
you know, having to have the right set of wrenches for those.
So yeah, there are dangerous things on your car too. That if you don't disconnect it correctly, you could cause damage to yourself and or the vehicle. So you got to watch out for that, especially airbags. Usually airbags, all the wiring for airbags is usually wrapped in bright yellow. So if you're thinking about playing with the bright yellow wrapped wires under your hood and stuff, don't.
Or at least disconnect the battery first.
Yeah. So back to tools, you know, carrying stuff in your car. So I'm trying to think. In my truck out there, I've got jumper cables. I believe I have a tow strap.
Flashlight.
Yeah, flashlight. It's a biggie. I definitely have a flashlight, jumper cables. I think I have, obviously, the tools to change the flat tire. I know everything's there. The factory jack and all that stuff is there. But beyond that, I'm a little light on tools, hand tools. Yeah. Yeah. So I think we'll take a break here and play another song for you. You're listening to KBOG in Bandon, the Car Psychic Show with Eric and Avery today. We're going to play some Sticks now, a little Rockin' in Paradise. Okay, that didn't start right. I apologize. Let's just give it another chance. That's how it goes. Okay. We'll be right back. was Styx with Rockin' in Paradise. And from 1981, we are here. You're here with the Car Psychic and Avery. We're just talking about cars, and we were talking about stuff you should carry in your car and kind of covered that. We were also celebrating the malaise era of auto manufacturing. That was a sad time, 73 to 83. There was a lot of crap produced back then. So, Avery, did you own a car of that era, 1973 to 1983? You must have owned something.
Oh, yeah. I had a 1978 Pontiac Trans Am High Performance 6.6.
6.6.
That really wasn't a malaise car.
Well, it was it was the detuned. The engines were all smogged up, for sure. They really knocked down the horsepower. They had a great big engine, but it only had 200 horsepower.
That's no, mine had 400. It was high performance.
High performance version.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, can you think of any other cars from that era that you owned? 73 to 83.
I had a 1974 Chevy van.
There you go. I had a 76 Chevy van, and that was a good van. I liked it.
I think I also had another Chevy van. But that one came from California and had all that smog stuff on it. It was a pig.
Oh, yeah.
Got rid of that.
Right, right. And I think I had a 77 Oldsmobile Starfire, which would be like the Chevy Monza of the day. It was the sibling to the Monza. Same production line, just different grille and taillights, basically. Yeah, and that had a little V6 in it and a manual transmission. I think it might have been a 5-speed, but that thing, it got along okay. It was when I worked at dealerships back then, I would pick up on the trade-ins. They would get cars traded in, and they said, "Well, this one we're not going to put it out on the line. Mm-hmm. It's too old and nasty, but we'll sell it to you for $500." Like, all right, I'll take it. And I think another one was a 73. Ford station wagon, and that was great. I remember taking my son home from the hospital in that one, the classic with the
wood panel on the side.
No, it didn't have the wood panel. It was this lovely metallic blue, but it had the big swing out rear tailgate, and then I believe it had the rear facing seats.
Oh, I remember
in the
those.
Back.
Yeah,
those were something else. Yeah. All right, topic-wise, we talked about the malaise era. I just wanted to kind of have a general topic here. And we talked about stuff you should have in your car, and we talked about looking under the hood of your car on occasion. Another thing I strongly suggest to people is your owner's manual. Owner's manuals are very handy, and you'll find lots of information in there. And you might learn things about your car that you didn't even know you could do, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's funny, though, how many cars don't have the owner's manuals in the car. It's like, what happened to them?
Right, yeah. People lose them, of course, in the old days.
How do you lose an owner's manual, though?
Well, get this. So I bought a 2017 Honda. It does not come with an owner's manual.
Is it online in a PDF?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
You go to the website, and when you buy a new car at Honda, they register you, and you're a member of their thing or whatever. And anyhow, you can find all the information you need there on the internet. And there's a quick reference guide, though. It was a nice laminated little spiral-bound binder with quick reference stuff, and that was good enough. I mean, it just had, you know, the basics. Where do you put gas in the car and stuff like that.
Where the fuse panels are located. Right,
really basic. And that was very handy. But, geez, with these new cars and their touch screens, flat screens, you go into the menus and you can find all the information you need in the menus on many cars. Literally, the owner's manual is on your flat screen on the dashboard.
Except if your battery's dead.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I tell people, you know what? You need some reading material when you go to the bathroom. Just keep your owner's manual in there. Yeah. Yeah, so those are good things to know about your car. You know, learn the owner's manual. I mean, a lot of people, I've seen it just to change a spare tire, like on a truck. It's like, how do I get that spare tire down to lower it down so I can get to it. And people literally have to go to the owner's manual to figure out, how do I lower the tire down?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because the it's a very, I guess, somewhat complicated process.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, and it could be intimidating to many people. It's like, no, I'll just call AAA. Well, if you don't have AAA, you're relying on yourself or someone else. So get to know how to do it. And it sounds like a wonderful weekend project. Let's practice changing a spare tire. Not.
Yeah, because, like, you know, in the pickup truck, sometimes you have to have, you have that long
bar crank handle
that usually you have to put like two or three pieces together. And some of them you have to put a special tool or a special socket on the end, like I know in the Ford you do, to get, so
you can lower the spare tire.
So you can lower it down so people don't just come and steal your spare tire.
And what happens is that mechanism gets all gunked up with road salt and debris, and it can become very difficult to operate. So it's better that you find these things out now than in the middle of the desert somewhere, so to speak.
Exactly.
So those are things, and you can have your mechanic do that. Say, hey, can we lower the spare tire and check it, check how it goes up and down, or maybe show me how to do it.
Yeah, or the dealer.
Yeah, the dealer, exactly. You know, that's unique to a lot of pickup trucks today, but in many other cars too, you know, your spare tire is hidden. And of course, many new cars today don't have a spare tire. They come with a tire inflation kit. And it may be a can of special juice, basically. Basically, there's some stop leak in a pressurized can. And that is your spare tire kit. And you would refill the spare tire with some juice and some sealant and get you to the next place. So become familiar with that is a good thing.
And some cars come with the run flat tires too.
That's right. Even so, that's right. And you need to know, is my car run flat? Can I drive on this flat tire for X amount of miles below a certain speed? That, speaking of which, that is the number one cause of tire failure, is low pressure. People not realizing that their tire only had 10 pounds of air in it, and they drove on down the highway, and that just superheats the sidewalls of the tire. The sidewalls are so flexed, and when they're approaching, 40, 50, 65 miles an hour with a flexed sidewall collapsed, that the heat becomes so intense that it blows out the sidewalls of the tire. And people say, I don't know, I had a blowout. I don't understand it. I must have ran over something.
Yeah. No. And, one thing I like to carry, some people might think it's overkill, but, from a prepper standpoint, I carry a spare fan belt or belts.
Yeah.
Or, like if you have that one big serpentine belt, if that breaks, everything goes.
Yeah, that's true. And that, for me, excuse me, that's why it's important to open the hood occasionally and look at the condition of your serpentine belt or the condition of your belts. And you shouldn't need to carry a spare if your belts are in good condition. But if your belts are cracked and frayed and so forth, well, it's a good thing you have a spare, because if you haven't changed your belt, you're going to need to do it very soon.
Yeah, and it depends, I guess, where you drive. I mean, if you're always in the city near a dealer or a mechanic or something, parts place, no big deal. But if you're going on a trip, I mean, that can make or break your vacation or your trip.
Right.
It's just one of those things, just like a spare radiator hoses.
Right.
Because especially if you're doing some, take the scenic route type of
across the desert. Yeah.
Type of trip where you can't depend that they're going to have the part for your make, model, year.
Yeah.
In stock.
I think that the radiator hose thing is a bit overkill. It really depends on the car, obviously, and the condition of the car. And one would argue that if I have hoses that are decrepit, I better change them now.
True.
So to speak. And most hoses, last today on a modern car, literally, 250,000 miles easily. For a hose that's hasn't been stressed in any outside way, so to speak, and let's say that the coolant's been changed regularly and the hoses have not been exposed to unusual oils or rubbing of some sort or kinking or whatever, then that hose should last a quarter million miles, if not more, in many cases. So those are things, but it's almost like some of these things are ingrained into us from the early days of automobiles.
True.
We become ingrained in, we better have, whatever, a spare spark plug in case my engine fouls or something.
Oh, and you know what the electronics, like in that 78 Trans Am, one time the module went out.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the night very well. I was going to a Yankees game in Baltimore. They were playing the Orioles.
Uh-huh.
I never got to the game because my module went out.
Your car just quit.
It just quit. And it's like about 1 o'clock in the morning, some guy in a tow truck came by, and he just happened to have a module back at his shop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So after that, so anything electronic, it was like, I better have this, because if not, I'm dead in the water.
And in that era of cars, that was just when we were going to electronic ignition and such.
Yes.
In that era. And it became this, as a mechanic back in that day, it became like, I don't know about this newfangled electronic stuff.
Yeah, no more points, plugs, and right. No more points and condensers, right?
Electronic ignition, oh my goodness. We were going into the jet age, you know. That's what it was like. And things became a little bit more mysterious for the mechanic and certainly for the owners. So we had to relearn the electronics. And now we had computerized ignition, or at first they called it electronic ignition.
Right.
That was the standard term. But they began to link those things together with the transmission, with the locking mechanism for the ignition. So these things, they talked together, and if one wasn't communicating with the other, your car wasn't going to start. And
yeah, I know. It's just like something. That seat we worked on today.
Yeah. Yeah, we worked on a 2002 Ford Explorer, and someone had put power seats in, but they were from a different model. And so the power seats did not work, and the plug did not plug in.
It was two different connectors.
Two different connectors. So we had to figure out, how can we move the seat forward or backward without knowing what wire goes to where, without wiring diagrams. It would have taken us hours to figure out wiring diagrams. So we just pulled the seat out. We flipped it over. We got some power from the battery of the car and took it over to the table we were working at, and we unplugged the electric motor, and then we just used the plus and negative from the battery to make the motor go forward and backward, and we were able to slide the seat forward and backward just by reversing the positive and negative. And so we did a workaround.
Yes.
We did a workaround and got the seat so we could put the seat back in the car with these two wires hanging out the back. And when you need to move the seat, you just hook power to those wires, and it's either going to go forward or backward. If it's going the wrong way, just switch the wires the other way.
Yes.
it might sound caveman, but on this particular situation, it was a satisfactory fix.
Yeah, you just have to wonder what were they thinking when they put those seats in that truck.
Right. Yeah, and we were baffled as to, how did they move those seats forward and backward if they were completely unplugged when we got to it, and no way you could plug it in. And the way they had the seat slid back, it was almost covering the rear seat bolts, which made it somewhat difficult to remove the rear seat bolts. But they had to have done it that way. It's all I can figure is they snuck those bolts in and just bolted that seat in.
It's like, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
What were they thinking?
They were thinking, let's just throw this thing together so we can off it.
Maybe, yeah.
And that's what they did. I know that mentality. Just whatever it takes. Spit shine it. Get it out of here.
Yep. Put some lipstick on that pig.
Yep. Yep. Someone will buy it. All right. Well, we're going to play another song in a moment. Looks like we'll go with, again, 1981, Baker Street by Jerry Rafferty. Let's hear how it sounds all these years later. Rafferty, Baker Street. You're listening to KBOG, the Car Psychic, here on Sunday. All right, Fran has joined us in the studio. How are you today, Fran?
Oh, I couldn't be better. Did a Beetlefest show with my sister June from 1 to 2.
Yeah, that was a good deal, good deal. So I got to listen to a little bit of it. It was pretty fascinating, you know, kind of a first-hand account of the Beatles invasion of the States.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, June was 13 and discovered I Want to Hold Your Hand and or She Loves You, one of the two, and just fell in love with them immediately.
Wow. Did you watch it on Ed Sullivan?
Yes.
I remember watching it.
Black and white. We didn't have a color TV.
Yeah.
I was only 2 years old at the time, but I imagine my parents were watching, I'm sure.
I could be your mother. Not quite.
Yeah. So, Fran, you said you might have a question.
I do. I have a question for the car psychic. So put on your magic hat, car psychic.
All right.
I have a 1993 Honda del Sol.
Mm-hmm.
When it's cold, like the first time I drive it,
mm-hmm.
when I go through the gears, it backfires a little bit. It like poots.
A little poop poop. Hmm. So she's running a little rich when she's cold, it sounds like. Hmm.
Could that be from the 76 station only having premium for a couple fill-ups?
No, it shouldn't be bad for it. It's kind of overkill. Premium fuel shouldn't cause that problem. One would imagine it would do the same on any fuel. But it's a good question.
Well, it does do it on any fuel. But today I noticed specifically, because I knew I was going to talk to you,
mm-hmm.
I noticed instead of just pooting mm-hmm. when I went on the freeway or on 101,
mm-hmm.
Shifting from like second to third,
it
pooted. Mm-hmm. And then it did it again from two more gears, but mm-hmm. lesser and lesser in volume.
Right.
So does it do it when it's warm?
No.
Okay. All right. So
when's the last time you did a tune-up?
Yeah.
Within the last month and a half.
Yeah. So the cars tend to run rich when they're cold, which means that they kind of give more gas to help warm it up, so to speak.
Did you change your air filter when you tuned it up?
Oh,
Do you know?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I looked at all that stuff under the hood at one point. Further investigation is needed.
Awesome.
Is the official answer.
I think if the car psychic sleeps on it, his psychic powers will rejuvenate during the night.
Sometimes if I just hold your car keys in my hand, it will magically fix it.
I'm going to call your bluff, car psychic.
All right, all right. I'm holding her car keys. I'm saying a little mantra here. And handing them back.
Okay.
All right. It's all fixed. It's all good.
Oh, okay. No more pooping.
Nope.
Did you do a past life analysis?
Yeah.
All right.
It used to be.
Tell me the name of the original owner.
Right. Yeah.
I dare you.
That's a good one. I like that.
John Voight.
Yeah. It was purchased down in Southern California, right?
Judy Arbor Fall was the original owner.
All right. That's good history. Knowing your history is good. And where the car grew up.
Oh, she kept every oil change record, everything she ever did to it.
And you still have them.
And I still have them.
How about that? Wow.
My folder is very thick now.
That's good.
I've had it since 1999. Best car I've ever had.
Fantastic. Wow. It's already almost 4 o'clock. Can you believe it?
Say it ain't so.
Time is run out for the Car Psychic Show, people. We want to thank you for listening to KBOG Bandon. 97.9 FM. We're going to close it out here with a little Phil Collins. And
excellent.
Thank you all for
Phil Collins? Joining us.
This would be In the Air Tonight.
Dedicated to me. A shout out to Fran.
All right.
Shout out to Mike, who said he heard us.
All right, guys.
Awesome.
Have a good day.
You too.
to the field.